this, that the reason why we gave the reason for if he has Bisman Hazeh Matzen Mora is not Yetze the Mora, the Matzah, because it's Mevatel. Mitzvahs Mevatel is Zu is Zu.
And that's Dinda.
Is that Dinda. Right?
Well, you're summarizing what we said last week.
If it's today that matzah is midrabono and
matzah is midrabono
and matzah is deraisa, and he eats them together, then we said that since it is min b'she'eno mino, the moro is mavate of the matzah, right? The Mora is Mevatel the Matzah, and it hasn't it announced the Matzah, and we can't have the Matzah. Now, why shouldn't we say that it's a purely a question of taste? It's got nothing to do with bitter and all that. There's no question that Matzah and Mora together have a certain taste. Matzah and Mora together have a certain taste. So, let us say the idea, according to Rashi and Rashbam, is that the Pesach and the Matzah and the Mora were eaten together. So, if one of them is missing, then it hasn't got the taste. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Gemara could have said, in that case, the Gemara should have said, since Bizman Hazeh, we haven't got the Pesach, so therefore you can't eat the matzah and moro together because you won't have the particular taste. And even if you eat them separately, you won't have the taste of matzah, so the whole thing won't work. But the Gemara doesn't say that. So from here we see that it is not that you've got to get the time of these things. But the whole idea is that of beetle. Now the Rambam says that the Pesach wasn't eaten together with the matzah or the mora. And the final psak of the Rambam is that at the time of the Beis HaMikdosh, you could eat either both of them together or separately. And you remember like whom that would be? That's the way Rabashi learns the Rabbonon. Afilu zebi fne atzma v'zebi fne atzma. That's the Braisa. That's the way he learns. But Rashi and the Rashbam learned that the Pesach and the Matzah Mora were all eaten together. So it could have said, the Gemara might have said, since Pesach, Matzah, Mora, according to Rashi and Rashbam, were eaten together, nowadays if you haven't got the Pesach, you can't have the Matzah, Mora because you won't get that taste. So we see that's not the reason. So therefore the Gemara comes on to the reason of if it's Matzah Drabonon, and if it's Mora Drabonon and Matzah Deraisa, that is Min Bisha Eina Mino, and the one is Mavat or the other. Whereas if both are deraisa, then the both of them stand. Got it? And the reason why the din of bitul is, if, for example, a drop of trefa soup falls into a drop of kosher soup, or a drop of trefa milk from a donkey, falls into a bowl of kosher milk, it's min b'mino, and nothing happens to it. Why? Because it doesn't lose its identity. Just doesn't lose its identity. But when there is others, it loses its identity.
Well, the problem is, I mean, it's maybe more fundamental than that, is I can see the application of people when you're talking about kashrus.
Yes.
I don't see how it really pertains to the discussion here.
Well, this is the big question. This is the big question. According to the Gemara, it comes out that it pertains also, although this is abstract, it pertains. And Rashi and the Rashbam link it, in spite of that, the taste of a drabonan and the taste of a raisa. But it is, you are quite right, but this, from this we see that it applies even to the abstract. All right, now I think we've got to go on to the shir. On today we come to the new shir. Omer Abel Ozer Omer Abay Shir. Kol she tibule b'mashkeh tzorich netilat yodayim. Got the place?
Yes, sir.
Daf Kuf Tesvo Omud Aleph. Did I stop?
Two more.
Next
to the last line, it's fine.
As I explained to you, two more works like this. Now, we're not going to discuss the philosophy of two more. We are going to discuss the halacha of Tuma. The halacha of Tuma is that a mace is avi avos hatuma. The corpse of a Jew is avi avos hatuma. That is the most intense type of Tuma that one can have. If anybody touches a corpse, he becomes an ov hatuma. If anybody touches an ova tumo, touches the person who's touched it all, he becomes a rishon letumo. If he touches another person, nothing happens to the other person. You follow? It can only go as far as that's as possible. But if a rishon letumo touches ochlin, touches food, the food becomes stone. Right?
Can we say it's Rishon the Tumor too? Or do we say it's
Nesim? No, it becomes, the food becomes the Sheni the Tumor. The food becomes the Sheni the Tumor.
But a person never becomes Sheni the Tumor.
No. The food becomes Sheni the Tumor. If that food touches other food, doesn't do anything to it. The food becomes, the great exception is Trumor. If that food touches Trumor, the tumor becomes a shlichi le tumor.
Is it wrong to eat shlichi le tumor?
Well, we'll see about that. We'll see about that. You follow? Now, Tuein, when he eats, first of all, a zav, that is, any one of us sitting around here, doesn't affect us. We are not Tuein. A Kohen is not, as we are not, but as each one of us is not allowed to eat Truma. This is a very serious matter to eat Truma. When does it become Truma? As soon as it is, a person takes it off, he's makrish, he says, this is Truma for the Kohen. Then it becomes Truma. If anybody eats that, it's a very serious matter. And if anybody eats from that which Truma has not been taken, very serious matter. Challah must also be taken. And it must be given to the Kohen. Now, the Kohen can eat Truma, and he's the only one that can eat it. And his wife can eat it. And his children can eat it. And once his daughter marries, and marries a Yisroel or a Levi, she can't eat it anymore. But now comes the very important part. A Kohen can only eat Trumo betaro and not betumo. That's why it says in the Gemara, in the Mishnah in Brochus, in the first Mishnah in Shas, may emos ha Kohen es Shema ba'arvis or ba'arvin, from when do we leave the Shema in the evening? Mishua sha Kohenim nichnosin lechel es Trumo son. That is, the Kohenim go to the mikveh every day so that they should eat their truma. Because if they are tomei, then they make the truma tomei. then it means that they're eating, then the Truma becomes Tomei. So the Kohen can be a Rishon LeTumo, and a Rishon LeTumo makes the a Kohen can have another type of Tumo. For example, if there is an issue of semen, even if it's a question that he's been with his wife, and with his wife, there's been an issue of semen, then he becomes what is known as a Tful Yom. Then that night he's got to go for, that evening he's got to go for Tvila. I'm quite sure that the Kohanim all used to go for Tvila to make sure you can't tell what can happen during the day. So they used to go Tvila every evening, and then they used to come home, they used to have their supper or their dinner, and they used to eat their Truma. And then they're certain that they ate it the Tairo. That is the one thing you've got to know. Another thing you've got to know is that the Torah is always very concerned, and the Chachomim are very concerned, that it's very easy to lose sight of laws and to forget laws and to create we've forgotten the law. So what they did, they made first of all a law that hands are always shnius l'tumo. Hands are shnius l'tumo. So if shnius l'tumo touch ochel, touch food, nothing can happen, because food can't become shlishi b'tumo. But what happens if it touches trumo? Then trumo becomes a shlishi l'tumo. So you've got to always wash your hands before you have trumo, because hands are always shnius l'tumo. So they instituted that we have got to wash our hands. And we have to know why we wash our hands. We ask why we've got our hands, because of this law, that the Chachomi made hands shnius l'tumo, and therefore you've got to be careful not to eat trumo. But trumo doesn't apply to our day. But then they made another law. They, first of all, the law is hands are always shnius l'tumo, and then they said if hands touch mashke, liquid, the liquid becomes a rishon l'tumo, and a rishon l'tumo makes a sheni l'tumo. So if a liquid that is a rishon l'tumo touches food, the food becomes a sheni l'tumo. Right? Now, when we take parsley and we don't wash our hands, and we dip the parsley into the salt water, and our hands touch get the salt water onto our hands, therefore the liquid, the salt water, what happens to that? It becomes rich in the tumor, and the parsley therefore becomes a shady tumor. So what do we do is we wash our hands first, wash our hands. So when we have washed our hands, then our hands are clean now. They're not shnius l'tumo. And if we take the parsley and drip it into the liquid, nothing happens to the parsley, and nothing happens to the liquid. So that is the reason why we wash our hands before the karpas.
A couple of questions. It doesn't matter the thoroughness. A simple washing, in other words, symbolic?
You know, okay. I don't like using the word symbolic, okay, because there is nothing symbolic in Torah. In Judaism there is, but in Torah there is nothing symbolic.
Thoroughness.
Oh, pardon?
Thoroughness of washing.
There isn't anything that is symbolic, because everything has got a deep meaning, and it affects, you see. For example, let me see. Take a look at that picture. There's a boat on that picture. What does that symbolize? It symbolizes a yacht. Can I go to that yacht and go rowing on it? I can't. Symbol. It's a symbol, you see. A symbol isn't right. There's nothing in Torah that's a symbol. It does everything. It's not a symbol, it's a mamash. Not just that it doesn't represent, it's a mamash.
An actuality.
That's the correct word. We play with it in homiletics, in drush, we play with it. But even if you play with it, you've got to be careful how far you can play with it. We play with it. But there is, in reality, there is no such thing as symbol. Everything is an actuality.
And a second question. When the Kohen has Truma,
yes,
and he gets it from many, many sources,
yes,
and he has an overabundance, can he sell?
Only to another Kohen.
That is all.
Yes, only to another Kohen. Now, once it's Truma, you can't do anything with it. Yes, Ezra?
It just seems to me that we have a sveika here in terms of why we're washing them. I mean, first, you know, there's so many. Why don't we just have the sveika and then have to wash?
What is the sveika?
First of all, if he's a Kohen, which is a big if, he knows if he's a Kohen or not. Secondly,
we don't regard that as a sofek.
All right, that's not even a sofek. That's not a sofek.
So we say a person, if he comes down, if he handed down to him that he's a Kohen, he's a Kohen.
All right.
You know, they try and work with that. In the non-religious Kohenim, they want to marry divorced women. And they say, well, who knows if I'm a Kohen? Who knows? I'm not a Kohen, you see. Okay. Oh, he said, all the records show that you're a Kohen. You can't get away with it. He says, I'm a Sophic Kohen. I mean, for Sophic, you're a doubtful Kohen. Yeah. Now, but if they come down to the Kohen, so that is no Sophic. What's the next Sophic?
Well, first of all, I guess it's not really sveika. All right. I had to return my question because there aren't any doubts anywhere. I guess we know whether or not it's true.
That's the whole thing. With the Chachomim say, all hands are sheni letumo. You can't say perhaps he didn't touch on anything. The Chachomim are gazed, all hands are sheni letumo. Whether you touch that, it doesn't matter anymore. We're not going into that. We say hands are sheni letumo. You follow?
Yes.
Even we are going to see how strict it is, we're going to see in today's shir. Excuse me, that might be somebody trying to get it. Once you've got to those two gazelles, then you don't have to. And we wash our hands, everybody washes his hands, only that we should know that there is such a din of tumor, and but it's for special application to Kohenim. But we all do it, that was the gazelle that was done. And of course, we're going to get the toast for. Hello, Bill. We are going to get a toast for us. I don't think you reached that toast for us today. We are going to get a toast for us where there's a very interesting thing. And that is the Yusha also. Start the Gemara. Yes, a woman, for example, was to take a hot bath with soap and all that sort of thing, and then she wants to. Doesn't help. Doesn't help. It must be in a mikveh.
But then the water is different.
The water is different, but it's not a question of cleanliness. No. She's supposed to be clean.
But here the water is the same. Everything.
Yeah, the water is the same, but taking it in a clean and pouring it over the hands, and the water must cover the hands at one time. Those dinim are the dinim which make it remove that tumor which is on the hands. You follow my knowledge? It's not symbolic.
No.
It's something that is mummish.
Of the hands with soap and running water must have cleansed and cleaned the hands just as effectively, if not more.
But not from tumor. But not from tumor. It's clean. The hands are now physically clean. You follow? But you might have heard me making a distinction between cleanliness and cleanness. Let me give you an example, my friend. Let me give you an example. A man steals money. He's got unclean hands. So why don't you want to shake hands with me? I say, you've got unclean hands. She's just have you got soap? I said, give him some lavender soap. He said, no, not lavender soap, carbolic. You know what Kabbalic soap is? Kabbalic soap. Where's your bathroom? Takes the cup and he starts. Where's the hot water tap? Right. And he starts washing his hands with Kabbalic. And now he comes to you. He says, Michael, will you shake hands with me? Now my hands are clean. What do you say to him?
Out there, I'm spot.
Your hands are not clean. Your hands are not clean. He said, but look how I wash them. I can't get them any cleaner than that. It's a different type of tumor. Tumor is a different type of thing. Do you understand what I was saying?
Yeah, well.
So this is a different type of, it's a different type. It's a question of cleanness, not cleanliness. Cleanness. Yes, sir. Marvin.
I came in late, so I missed it. Just if we could back up a bit. The man himself is a Shenila tumor, right?
The man is, no. A man can be a Rishenila tumor. He can't be a Shenila tumor.
Okay, well.
The Chachomi made hands Shnias the tumor.
Okay, so the man is a Rishenila tumor.
Yes.
Okay, now. Everybody today
is a Rishenila tumor, yes.
Okay, now. Everybody today is Tomei.
It's a Rishenila tumor.
Rishenila tumor.
Yeah.
Because of Tumat Met.
Yeah.
Okay? So the hands become a Sheni.
Yes. What's and Shnias the tumor you can remove. How can you remove it? By Natilus, you're dying.
Now, how did the hands become Masheni Lutuma?
That was a Gezeiras Chachomim. They made it. They can do that. They imposed it. They said all the hands are Tuma.
Okay, so I'm Rishon Lutuma. My hands are Sheni Lutuma.
Yes.
If I wash my hands, the that Tuma leaves my hands. My hands also become Rishon Lutuma, right?
It becomes a Rishon Lutuma, yes.
For how long?
It's a Rishon Lutuma remains. We can't remove that.
No. I mean, what must happen to bring back the Sheni Lutuma to my
hands? That we can have in the Gemara afterwards. You can see my touch somewhere, then he's already there, they already gave the Sheni. As soon as he's Messiah Das, you know what Messiah Das means?
To be aware.
No, to remove one's concentration. As soon as there's Messiah Das, actually, if you want, it moves as it becomes a region of tumor.
Okay, but then, as soon as he loses his concentration, the Sheni comes back.
Then the Sheni comes back. But all the time that he's eating, you see to it that he doesn't do it. And therefore, we are very careful when we eat. We don't touch, scratch our head or anything like that. Don't touch parts of our body that are normally covered.
Why does scratching the head bring on this tumor?
Because that is regarded as sometimes on the head is something unclean
scaling,
or something like that,
scaling
or itching or perspiration. Perspiration.
But tumor is always in some way related to death.
Not necessarily. A sheretz is tumor. You can get it. Not necessarily.
A live sheretz is tumor.
No, but you can get
a dead sheretz.
You can get a tumor. That's not a needle is tumor. It's not dead.
But a needle is
tumor. It's not dead.
A needle is a different kind of death. The potential of life was there. That's what.
That's already the Torah. He's going to die, but doesn't mean to say he can die. Doesn't mean to say he's dead. There are different types of tumors.
It's called dead, dead by the
Torah. But he's not dead. Why at the time is a Torah? Because he's isolated. But this isn't that he still isn't death. But this is a deal. They make it Shnias Latumo. Now, you will notice, if you might have noticed, that some people, when they wash their hands for eating, take water and wash it, and then wash it again. And then take it and wash it. Have you ever seen that with them?
Three times.
That is like the person who lives in Los Angeles and the doctor says to him, the climate is too hot here for you. You've got to go to a colder climate. San Jose, San Francisco might be even better. Perhaps even the place you came from, was it Portland? Perhaps even Portland. Oh, so I must go to a colder climate. He says, why? He says, well, it'll do you good. So what does he do? He goes to the North Pole and he rents an igloo from an Eskimo. He wants to... it's nonsense, you see. He's driving it to its... Instead of bringing it to its logical conclusion, he brings it to its ultimate conclusion. That's not what he's there. So the reason is, when he pours the water over the hands, he thinks, well, also it could be that the water becomes a rish in the tumor. The water becomes a rish in the tumor because the gazero is that the shady in the tumor makes the hands a rish in, makes the water a rish in the tumor. You follow? But we don't take it like that, provided he pours the water over at the same time. Because if a person goes into a mikveh, if the mikveh doesn't become tomei, that's not the idea. If he goes into a mikveh, the whole of his body is immersed, and the body becomes tohol, becomes pure. That doesn't do it. But some people want to do it, but don't stop them if they want to do it. That's all right. If they didn't do it right the first time, then the second time it works out right, then it will work out right. Have you got the idea?
So that is the basis.
I mean, pardon?
Isn't there such a thing now? Because I remember seeing once that some people do Negelwasser additional time for exactly that reason.
That's very
good. To wash off the tummy water.
Excellent, four times. That's the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon has got that. But that is a different type of thing. That is Ruach Ro. That is not tumor. That is Ruach Ro. No. There's a Ruach Ro that lies in that. No. That's a little bit tumor. But you're quite right that the Vilna Gaon says you do it a fourth time too, just to remove all the water.
So why is three shdus and four is a big chokmah? I don't understand that.
No, it's only
on but it's a different type. It's Ruach Tumor.
It's a get up in the morning.
In the morning. That is because Ruach Ro, that is a different type of tumor that in there. When you did it, did you come across that Gaon where he says you do it four times?
I haven't
studied
Gaon on this.
You haven't seen it? Sometimes it is quoted. Yes, sometimes it is quoted. All right. Now, with that information, we are ready to start the Gemara. There's only one thing I've got to tell you about this Gemara before we started, which is a very simple thing. We've got charoses. The Gemara takes charoses to be a liquid. Harvey, you've got to get ready, as my wife Rabbi Elozer Omar Rab Asia said, Rabbi Elozer, that Rab Asia said, Kol shetibulo b'mashke tzorich netilas yodayim. Anything that is dipped into a liquid needs netilas yodayim. Therefore, when we dip the karpas into the salt water, if our hands, which are shnios letumo, touch the salt water, then the gezeira is that the water becomes a rishon letumo, and a rishon letumo makes the food a sheni letumo. That is, the karpas is a sheni letumo. And that is why we wash our hands first. So once we wash our hands, we have removed the sheni letumo, and we can go forward in it. Omar Rav Popo Shmamina, from this statement of Rav Oshias, we can understand, Hai Chasa, Sorich Leshakuye Becharosis Mishum Kappa, that it is necessary not to be metabel the chasro into the charoses, but to sink it into the charoses. Because if you just touch it into the charoses, your fingers are not going to get wet. But if you sink it into the charoses, it's going to touch the charoses, it's going to make the charoses a rish in the tumor, and the charoses will make the chasro a shady letumo. Yes?
I thought we just learned a moment ago that we weren't supposed to do that. We just were just a touch will do. When we were studying haroses and kapo and all that, didn't we decide that we just a light bit of haroses, nothing?
No, it was only in the discussion.
Okay.
It was only in the discussion because some of us knew this Gemara already.
No, we said that.
Oh, I see, because that will come to you in a moment. We haven't done the Meskona yet. That is a moment. Now, Tzorich Lashakuya Becharosis Mishum Kapo. And what is the reason for Charosis? What did we have? We had that whole discussion in Tosfos. What is the reason for Charosis? The Charosis is Mishum Kapo. How do Rashi and the Rashbam learn Kapo? What is Kapo? Poison Eris. There is an Eris in the Tzorich of the Chaso. And so if he dips it, if he sinks it into the charoses, it removes the effect of the couple. But nevertheless, it's a mashke, and it is. And the hands of the tameh, the mashke, make it a rishon, and the rishon makes the chasa a sheni. The is alkodaitov, says the Gemara, lo tzorich l'shaku yinikideshakui, because if you say that it's not necessary to sink it into the charoses, netilas yodaim lomali. Why do you need netilas yodaim? Holo noga. He's not touching the charoses. He's only taking the chaso and touching the charoses, touching it, and that's all you need. He's not, the charoses doesn't reach his fingers. That asks the Gemara. So therefore the Gemara wants to bring a proof here. From here the Gemara wants to bring a proof that you, since you need the tilas yodayim for the tibul sheni, for the morrow, the reason must be that we are required to sink it into the charoses. Says the Gemara, no, v'dil mola olam eimoloch lo tzorich l'shekuya. Perhaps it is that it's not necessary to sink it. I, the question of couple, the couple may rechomais, and the couple dies from the reach, from the smell of the charoses. It doesn't die because you put it into it. It's the aroma, you call it aroma here. The aroma of the charoses causes the couple to die. Elo lomo, then in that case, elo lomali netilas yodayim. So why do you need netilas yodayim? Says the Gemara, because dilmo mashke ulei. Because perhaps he will send it. Perhaps he will go deeper. So in order to make sure, you require netilas yodayim. So now we reach the conclusion that as far as the chaso is concerned, it isn't necessary to sink it into the charoses. All one has to do is to dip it in, just to let it touch it, and the smell of it can kill the couple. Now the question, and why do we wash our hands? We wash our hands because perhaps he will let it go in deeper and it will touch it. The Omer Rapopo, and Rapopo said, Lo nishi inish morer b'charoses, a man mustn't l'hashos. L'hashot. Echomim ze b'anglit. L'hashot.
L'hashot is
to delay.
To delay, to wait.
It's not quite the word here. The Omer Rapopo, lo nishi inish morer b'charoses, a person shouldn't let the morrow be long in the charoses. Dilmo agav chaye, the tavlin mavati lady merode, because perhaps through the sweetness of the spices in the charoses, mavatile, it annuls the bitterness of the morrow. It takes away from the bitterness. Uvav inon tam morrow veleko, and we need the taste of morrow, and it isn't there. So now we've got another two dealing that we learned from it.
It would be some marinated, right? To settle in.
So now we learn two dealing. The first deal is that when we take the morrow and we put it into the charoses, we must only touch it there. If, however, one puts it in deeper, be very careful not to keep it there long. Because if you put it in and you wait a little while, it takes away the bitterness of the morrow. So you've got to be very careful about this. By the way, I wonder if I can show it to you, whether it's going to work. So now we've got these two dealing, you see. First of all, that one needs the time of morrow. First of all, that it's not necessary to sink it in, rather than dip it in, which is preferable, because sinking in, there's a danger of it will take away the time of the bitterness. So just touch it and that is all. Now the next part of it is a new thing. Ad berei Rav Chisto le Rabona Ukvo. Rav Chisto brought Rabona Ukvo, or led Rabona Ukvo, the Dorash, and he was Dairish. This is what Rabona Ukvo, our teacher Ukvo, learned. Nota yodav betibul rishon, if a person washes his hands in the first tibul, Note Yodav Betibul Sheni. He still has to wash his hands a second time. A second time he's got to wash his hands because of the morrow. Now Tosfos is going to ask the question, but he's got to wash his hands a second time not because of the morrow but because of the matzah. But we're going to discuss that. Just let us take it first of all. Let us just get an idea of what the Gemara is about.
What's the timing between Tibur Rishon and Tibur Sheni?
We're going to come to that, Uri. That's the Gemara. The Gemara raises that question. Not a Yoda of the Tibur Rishon. You remember where the Tibur Rishon takes place? Immediately after the Kiddush. Right at the beginning of the Seder. The first thing, really. Not a Yoda of the Tibur Rishon. If he says, Rabbona Ukvo, he washes his hands for the Tibur Rishon. Not a Yoda of the Tibur Sheni. He washes his hands for the second table too. Omru Rabbonon Kamei de Rav Popo. The Rabbonon said this in front of Rav Popo. Hoba Almo Itma. And they wanted to say that they learned this not for Pesach, but generally speaking, if a person washes his hands because he's going to do a tibul, and then afterwards he's going to do a tibul into a liquid, and afterwards he's going to eat something else, he's going to do a second time, he's going to make a tibul, so he needs washing of the hands twice. The Isal Kodaito Hoho Itmer, because if you will think that it applies to here, Lomo Li Netilas Yodain Trei Zimni, why do you need Netilas Yodain twice? For Mashele Yodai Chodo Zimno. He's already washed his hand once for the Tibur Rishon. He's already washed his hands for the Tibur Rishon. I'll take it again with you in a moment. Omer lehu Rav Popa said Rav Popa adarabba hochi itmer. It is correct to say that we've learned it specifically about Pesach. The Isal Kodaita Ba'alkebo Itmer Lomali Treiti Buli, but because if you say that he learns it generally, what do you need two tibulim for? Says the Gemara Elomai, then what then will you say? Hocho, it applies to Pesach. Hocho Itmer, we've learned it with regard to Pesach. Natilas Yodoim Treizimi Lomali, why do you need twice here? Answers the Gemara, twice here, Ho Machale Yore Chadozimi. He's already washed his hands once for the Tibur Rishon. Answers the Gemara, Amri, I will tell you, Kivan de boy la meimara gadato, since after the Tibur Rishon, he's got to say the Agoda, Vahalelo, and he's got to say Hallel. Dilmo asuchi ashe le daite venoga. Perhaps he will be Messiah das, and he will touch somewhere on his body, he will forget about it. And then his hands become Shnias Atuma again. That is why you've got to do it a second time. Just let us do this piece of Gemara over again in order to get a better idea of it. Says the Gemara, Adberei Rav Chisto le Rabbono Ukvo. Got the place? Eight lines from the top. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 lines from the top. Adberei Rav Chisto le Rabbono Ukvo. Rav Chisto led Rabbono Ukvo into the base medrash, the Dorash, and Rabbono Ukvo gave his shir. Dorash, he began giving his shir. This is what he said. Not al Yodav Betibul Rishon, not al Yodav Betibul Sheni. If a man dips, then he's got to wash his hands first. And if afterwards he dips again, he's got to wash his hands a second time. Now we don't know whether Rabbono Ukvo said this for the Pesach or he said for any time in the year. Omru Rabbonon Kamei de Rav Popo, and Rabbonon said it in the presence of Rav Popo, and they said Ho ba Almo Itmer. We've got to say that Rabbono Ukvo wasn't speaking about Pesach, but he was speaking generally. The Isal Kodaita Hocho Itmer, because if you will say that, that he was speaking generally. Now, why is it necessary to do it generally? Because generally, if he dipped it, and he ate, and afterwards he dips again, when he dipped the first time, did he know that he was going to dip the second time or not?
not yourself. So he wouldn't know that he's going to dip. They bring onto the table, they bring carrots, and he dips into a relish. Afterwards, they bring lettuce. He dips it again into an Italian relish. He dips it again. But he didn't know. If he didn't know in between, then we say he didn't. He was Messiah Das. He didn't have in mind that he's going to do it. So the first tibul doesn't help for the second tibul. That is the way the Rabbonon explained these two Rabbos. The Isar Kodai the Hochi Itmer, because if you are learning it with regard to Pesach, Lom Leti the Lida Tila Shodaim Tzai Zimli, why has he got to wash twice? For Mashale Yore Chore Zimno, he's already washed his hands once.
And he knew he would do it again.
And he knew he's got to do a Tibul Sheni. So when he washes his hands the first time, he washes his hands for the second time also. He knows he's got a Tibul Sheni. Omar Lehu said Rapopa, Omar Lehu Rapopa said Rapopa to them, other Rabba on the contrary. Hochoi Itmer, I would say that we learned it with regard to Pesach. The Isal Kodaitach Ba'almo Itmer, normally Trei Tibuli. Because if you will say, generally speaking, what do we need two tibulim for? Said they to Rapopa, Elomai, what then will you say, Rapopa? Hochu Itmer. It means, speaking about Pesach, Netilas Yodam Trei Zimni Lomali Homashele Yode Chode Zimno. But why should he yadi twice? He's already washed his hands once. Says Rapopa, Amri, I would tell you, even the boy la meimer agadeto bahalelo dilmo asuki aschei ledaite benoga. It's not he does the washing of the hands and he eats the karpas and then look what follows. Manishtanu alaylo aze holachmo anyo manishtanu alaylo aze avodimo yinu and a long agoda, and after the agoda there is still halel. So he's Messiah Das, he loses concentration that he's washed his hands and he must keep his hands clean. Till there. Omar Rovo said Rovo, another thing. Bolo matzo yotso, bolo moro lo yotso. What is the position if a person swallows matzah? If he swallows matzah, he's yetzer the matzah. He swallows a kazayis matzah. Is Yetzer and Matzah. Bola Moror lo Yotzer. But if he swallows Moror, he's not Yetzer. So we've got to understand what is the difference. The difference is that in the Torah with regard to matzo, it says 7 days shall you eat matzo. And if he swallowed it, does it mean he hasn't eaten it? If a person swallows his food, does it mean he hasn't eaten it?
Mm.
He's eaten. So he's Yetzer that. It's not the correct thing to do. Lechatchila, you've got to have the tar matzah. But in the Torah, it says, Yochli, you've got to eat it, he eats it. So what is the difference? He's eaten it already. Whereas moror, why do we have moror? Because by a mororu chayeyem, because they embittered their lives. So if they embittered their lives, he's got to taste the merirus. He's got to taste the bitterness. Therefore, if he swallows it, he doesn't taste any bitterness.
He gulps it.
No, he swallows it.
He doesn't chew it.
Doesn't chew it, no. Puts it in there and swallows it.
In fact, if you don't want to taste anything like bitter medicine...
Yes, you swallow it. Yes, you swallow it. That's quite right. You swallow it in order to avoid the taste.
On the same token, if he would swallow hummus, would that also not count?
Well, but he's eaten chometz. He says you mustn't eat chometz.
You mustn't have it in the house.
You mustn't eat it. Well, once he's eaten it, of course, then that's no good. Now, the whole question is matzo umoro. What happens if he swallows matzo umoro? So we say, yedei matzo yotso, yedei moro lo yotso. What happens, another case, korchon besiv uvolo. He ties them with sieve and he swallows it. Now, I can't tell you exactly what sieve is, but I'll try and explain to you what it is in what the Gemara regards it, speaks about sieve. Evidently, a tree has got its trunk, and round the trunk there is a bark. Now, some trees have got something else growing around the bark. Does anybody know what it is?
Moss.
A big pardon?
Irish moss. between the bark
outside
and
the bark.
Tree,
exterior
the tree.
To it.
I think it's outside of the bark.
You don't have a green moss.
You don't have anything botany.
That would have to be some other plant.
Inside the bark.
No, it
can be. Now, I looked it up in the dictionary, and in the dictionary it's got the word bast or bast. B-A-S-T.
Bast fiber?
Bast fiber.
It's inside. That's inside.
Is it inside? It's not outside.
Right.
It's inside. Now, that is what it means. That is the thief. That is the thief. I thought it was outside. The way the Gemara speaks about Siv, I thought it was outside.
That'd be the Canaan, right?
A big part? I can't hear.
Siv in French is just about sap.
Siv in French is
sap.
No, this is something more substantial. It's more substantial, but it can't be anything hard. Seems to be something soft, but it's more substantial.
It's sort of a membrane.
That is what it seems to be. It's a membrane. Now, what would be the position? Bola matzo umoror yede matzo yotzi borele korchon besiv uvolon. What is the position if he binds them with a sieve, with this bass, and he swallows them? Then says Rava, af yedei matzo nami lo yotzo. He's not being yetzer the matzo also, because that is certainly not, that he's not even eating. So it means it's covered with something. So that isn't even eating.
The sieve, is that kind of food or something?
No, Fred Kotkin said, it's a membrane between the bark and the trunk of the tree.
But how do you get it? I mean,
you get it by taking off the bark, you get it.
I wonder if it would be anything like wrapping what? With willow. They are with a willow bark.
Phloem. The phloem of plants, used especially in cordage, matting, and fabrics.
Yeah,
a strong woody fiber.
That's
a strong woody fiber obtains chiefly from the phloem of plants.
The phloem is the bark. Inside the bark.
And used especially in cordage mapping and traps. That's all I can tell you what it is. Therefore, matzi is also not yoti, a yotze. Afide matzi namina yotze.
It's like, oh.
Are we pardon?
No, what the material that sometimes the woody material that you get
you don't mean Excelsior? You don't mean Excelsior, do you?
No.
Oh, that stuff.
That is
Esrogim coming.
Esrogim compact.
Oh, that sounds like that. Yeah. Sounds right.
Sort of a hempy like.
That's right. That sounds right.
Where
did you find that? Because it doesn't touch any part of the body at all. Rashi or Rashbam is going to say it's like throwing it into a bottle or throwing it into a flask. That isn't derech achilo.
Eventually it does.
Yes, but it's not derech achilo. You don't eat like that. Not derech achilo. You don't eat a thing like that.
What is the definition of achilo anyway? What is
achila?
Achila is to swallow or to chew? What is
achila? Now, achila is not... achila is eating. Now, some people chew, some people gulp, some people swallow. And look here, I know long, long ago when I was a little, little child, there was an old man without any teeth, and he didn't have false teeth. And he used to swallow his food. He swallowed it.
Before we just made the distinction between swallowing and eating.
We said that swallowing is, or accepting it with moral. Because moral, you've got to have the taste. And if you swallow, you don't get the taste.
Is achila swallowing plus something else?
No. Achila is swallowing the food. But if you wrap it in something and you swallow it, that's not a chilo. If you swallow a capsule, then the gelatin melts. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea, that the gelatin melts and then the what's in the capsule goes into the body, into the part of the body. But that would probably not be eating.
Well, we don't say you eat medicine, just take it.
Yes, but that would probably not be eating it, because it goes down in a capsule. So that's not eating the substance of it. You can say you're eating the gelatin you're eating. You're swallowing the gelatin, but not that's what's inside. Omer Rav Shimi Barashi, said Rav Shimi Barashi, Matzo lifnei kol echod ve'echod, the din is that matzo must be before everybody at the table. Moro lifnei kol echod, and moro must be before everybody at the table. Becharosis lifnei kol echod ve'echod, and charosis must be before everybody at the table. What's missing?
My moro.
Moro is there.
I'm sorry,
what is missing? What is?
Wine.
Yeah. Well, you see, wine is speaking about the ka'oro. It's speaking about the dish. You don't put wine in the dish.
Yeah.
That's right. And what else? And the zeroa. Uh-huh. So why hasn't it, why doesn't say it, why mustn't the zeroa, according to this, according to Rav Shimi Barashi, everybody must have before him matzo and moro and charoses. But he doesn't say the shnei tavshilim. Why doesn't he say the shnei tavshilim? Of course, what is the reason?
You're not eating the shnei.
Exactly. These things you're going to eat, so each one has to have it. But the matzo and the moro and the is not for eating purposes. That's just for looking at it. For looking at it, you don't need it in front of everybody. Then one can be for the whole table, right? And the ein okrin et shulchan ela lifnei mi she'omer agodo. And we said that we take away the shulchan after he said the after he's done the karpas, we take away the shulchan. So we say we take away these. We take away the ka'ora. With us it works as the ka'ora. We take away the ka'ora only from the one who says the agoda. But all the others keep the agoda. Rav Huna Omer, Rav Huna says, Kulu nami lifnei mi she'omer agoda. He says everything is only before the person who says the agoda. That the matzo is before the person who says the agoda, the moro is before, and the charoses says. And when it comes the time to eat it, he dishes it out. The hilchos of Rav Huna, and the law is like Rav Huna. That is the way we do it. We've only got one ka'ora on the table. We haven't got the ka'ora before each person. Sometimes when there is a big seder, then we might put another ka'ora in for.
What does ka'ora mean?
The dish. Ka'ora is the dish. The seder plate. The seder plate, as they call it here. Now, finally, to finish this piece of Gemara, ask the Gemara, Loma okrin et ha-shulchan. Why do we take away the table? Everybody agrees that we take away the shulchan, we take away the ka'ora. Omer devei Rabbi Yani, G'day she'yakiru tinokas v'hishalu. It's hekeru tinokas. And as Rashi and the Rashbam said in the previous page, hekeru tubo asina, we do many hekerus. Abaya habi Yosef kamei de Rabo. Abaya sat in front of Rabo. Choza de komadli takomi kamei. This Abaya saw that they took away the taka from before him. Omar luhu, he said to the people at the table, Adain loko achlinon. Osu komi akri takomi kamon. We haven't even started eating and they take away the taka from us. Why is it? Omale Rabo said, Rabo was his host, said Rab Rabo to him, Portarte milomer manishtano. You have now freed yourself from saying manishtana. Why is this night different? You've asked already the question. You've asked the question, why is this night different from every other night?
What exactly did they take away?
The taco.
They took away the ka'oro, the dish, the seder table. The taco is the ka'oro is the dish, the plate.
Taco
is the tray. And shulchan is the table.
What tray do we have to say this?
The three times.
Well, this is when they were lying on couches.
Have we got the taco nowadays? We've got this. Nowadays, we've got shulchan.
but that's altogether a different law. We don't take away the shulchan anymore. So we do things differently today because of that.
Question on the previous piece.
Yes.
There's a custom that today only the one conducting the Seder washes his hands for karpas.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to follow with the Gemara we just learned. It would imply here that everybody should wash their hands. Because if everybody's dipping, if everybody does a dip, at Tibul Rishon, so everybody should wash their hands and before the Tibul Rishon.
Yes, you see, we are going to discuss another question today. And that is the Gemara doesn't view very favorably those who who are washing their hands for Seiros, because the Tekona was really on bread. So they don't use it very favorably in it only, but that we're going to discuss, all those things we've got to discuss. Some of these things crop up in Tosfos, not that particular thing, but some of these things will crop up in Tosfos. But all that is going to come into this piece of Gemara.
Okay, and one more thing.
Yes.
Rashi is one of those who feels that the chasa must be dipped into the chorosis because of kapha.
Yes.
So
everybody says that about okay. The only question is about with the Tibul Rishon.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So all these people who say this, do they use chorosis all year round when they eat lettuce, or do they abstain from lettuce?
Yes, we discussed. That. We discussed that question, and that is, you know. That are bad for a person. I gave the example, I can't take cucumber. Now what does it mean? Does it mean that there is something wrong with me, or does it mean there's something wrong with a cucumber?
Yes.
Well,
you call that a California value.
Yes. Now, does it mean that there's something wrong with me? Avaraya, everybody else can eat cucumber. I can't eat, so there must be something wrong with me, not with a cucumber. On the other hand, I can eat everything else, not cucumber. Perhaps there's something wrong with a cucumber. The answer is, there is something wrong with a cucumber. But most people are so
constituted
that little bit that's wrong with the cucumber won't affect them. But I'm so constituted that that's wrong with the little bit that's wrong with the cucumber will affect me. Now, a certain doctor once told my father of a shalom, he said, don't eat cucumber, mitzvah, to do a mitzvah. And through the mitzvah you're going to do something that is injurious to you, however slight, or however much in the future, that the Gemara won't allow. That the deed doesn't allow. You follow? Did you ask it, Marvin?
Yes, but is there anything said about any of the people? Did they abstain from it all year round?
It's possible that they didn't eat very much of it, or didn't eat it all during the year.
Or if they did,
You see, charosis is another reason for the mud and all that we also had. For the mud and all that. So they might have said, if you dip it in vinegar, it's just as good, probably. We'll do exactly the same thing. All right, now that is the piece of Gemara. Once we've got the piece of Gemara, we can go more deeply into it and we can already start. Is that all right? Maize, in the Rashbam, to a lesser degree, and in the Tosfos, we're going to get it to a higher degree. If you just look at the very first Tosfos, Kol sheti bula b'mashter tzorich natilo, pirish b'kuntres, Rashi and Tosfos explain it, afal gav de kaimelon anote yodav l'peiras arei ze mikasei oruach, if a person washes his hands for peiras, he is regarded as coarse. The Chachom don't ask for it, you do it. If a person does too much of the deen, too much of it, he brings it to its ultimate conclusion, instead of bringing it to its logical conclusion, that person is regarded as a gas ruach. That's right.
What kind of proof would it be
in that? Pardon?
Doesn't it depend on
yes, I'll explain to you. I'll just say to you. we have grapes. So my wife says, just a minute, I want to wash the grapes before you eat it. She puts it under the tap and brings it. It's still wet. I don't have to go and wash my hands before I eat the grapes. If I do, I'm a gase horuach. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
For bread, yes. Gase horuach. So, Pirish bekuntes afal dav de kaimel on a native yodav de peres arezimi gase horuach, given the eco mashki. But the kaimel on kola posel is a tuma metame mashkin vies de chilo. That we have got anything that puzzles truma. Then if it is metame mashkin, it is metame mashkin liya yos techilo.
What does that mean?
To make it a rishon atuma.
But what is posel as a truma? What does that mean?
Anything that is posel as a truma, that if you touch it, it makes the truma posel. Let us say if a rishon the tumor touches trumo, the trumo becomes posel.
Okay.
The trumo becomes posel. So that then anything like that, the chachomim said, if that touches water, the water becomes a rishon. If that touches, that's what the techilo is. Have you got it?
Yes.
Kol ha-pusel is a tuma matame mashkin yes techilo. Havelu lahanach peiros kemo namo. V'tzorich litor kemo namo. He says, then these peiros is to be considered as bread. Why? Because the whole idea is to dip it into water. We don't eat it if it's not dipped into water. That's why it's not regarded as gasei or ruach. When my wife puts the grapes under the tap and brings it and it's wet, the wetness isn't, it's just there by chance. But the whole idea of carpet is I must dip it in. If I must dip it in, then it's got another dip. That is what Tosfos says. All right, have your...
If I may, I still have another question. It's a very basic question regarding the Chachamim deciding what... Is it changing something which is sheni into your rishon?
Yes.
Is it just a mechanical type of thing? What is the reality attached to that? I can't understand that formula. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yes, I know exactly what you're trying.
I can't understand that at all. Is it just technical, so that they want to? Is it the behavior they're putting on the people?
Well,
or is there anything real attached under that behavior?
Well, let me put it to you this way, Eve. According to the Torah, I may move a pen on Shabbos, take a pen and put it somewhere else. According to the Torah, the Rabbonim came along and they say that it's muktzah. Now, when it is muktzah, what happens to it?
That's a behavior.
You said no. It's much more than a behavior. No longer a behavior. We say once the Rabbonim have instituted that, and the Torah says lo sosu, that you mustn't depart from anything that the authorities in your day. By the way, today we haven't got that type of authority, you see. So today it doesn't apply. But in the time of the Gemara, when you had the Tanoim and the Amoroim, that still applied. And they could make a takona of that nature. And if they made it a corner of that nature, then there was something mamish in it. There was something mamish in it. If they made it a corner that we've got to keep 2 days yontif, then in the second day yontif there's a holiness. Can't say just it is a behavior. There is no such thing. If they made it, then they brought holiness into that second day of yontif. You follow what I'm saying?
In a sense, we have something like that with quarantine. Quarantine is an official state.
That's right.
And it exists until an official...
That's right. That's right. You've got something... That is less. Yes, that is less. But when the Chachomim do something, then that is because that is already it gets intrinsic value. It's not just that it is subjective. But then it gets objective and intrinsic value. Mukta. The Torah says if the Chachomim institute something, then it's so what does Mukta do? If we touch Mukta on Shabbos, it affects us. It's not just that it is in order to prevent us. But Mukta becomes something that intrinsically affects us. And the Torah gives them the right to do it, and the Torah makes that there is a change in it. You follow, Eve? Bob?
With the washing of hands before Tibu Rishon, is that because of Tuma, or because of Hekero de Tinokas, or half and half, or because if Takan was put on bread, and we see that it's really not for other things.
The Tosfos wants to say, this is a new idea in Tosfos. The Tosfos wants to say that makes a distinction if grapes are washed to come to the table. So why are grapes washed? To remove any stray. To remove any stray on it, we wash the drain and it comes to the table. I don't have to go wash my hands for that. Here Tosfos says there is a difference. Because it's not, let us say, that they were washed before this parsley was washed before. It was washed 2 days before Pesach. And it's put on the table, we're quite sure the spray is all off. We must still dip it in. So the dipping in is part of the din that you've got to dip. If the din is part of the din that you've got to dip, then it's like bread. Then it's not just that you are dipping to remove that. Then you've got to make a but not make a brocha.
I don't understand. Why is it like bread then?
Because it is there. What is the idea of bread? The idea of the bread is so that it should be betaro. It shouldn't be betame. Why do I dip? I dip here not just to remove the spray. It's part of the deal. I must take it and I must dip it. Since I must dip it, then the dipping in it, the being wet, is a din. It's not there just to remove something. But that is the din, it must be wet. I must dip in it. Whatever the reason may be. But they instituted that I must dip. If they instituted that I must dip, then it's to be regarded, the din of Mashke applies.
Even though the dipping has nothing to do with what the Kohen was doing?
No. Nothing to do with the case, because it applies to everybody, excepting that in the case of the Kohen, where an ordinary person would be able to eat it, a Kohen wouldn't be able to eat it. If it were Truma, Kohen can't eat it. If parsley, Truma isn't parsley also. All these things require Truma.
Yeah, but see, there's an objective reality of these things. There is a concept in the world called Truma.
Yes.
And there is something to it. If we knew how to look at it, we could see it. So it doesn't really come and go with the takana.
It does. Well, this
it's
is
something
the point,
real, though.
This is the point that I'm making. It does come and go with the takana. It does. For example, if a congregation takes a storefront, which on the one side has a barber, not very elevated, and on another side has got a travel agency.
On the left of me and the right of me and Kedusha in the middle.
We decide that it's going to be a shul. It immediately gets Kedusha. What did you do? It immediately gets Kedusha. Gets holiness. But nothing has happened yet. We haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
The mere fact that we have decided that this is going to be a shul already makes it a modern Kodesh. We haven't done anything yet. And the more we daven there, the more Kedush is added to it. The more we learn there, the more Kedush is added to it. But even before you do it, it's already a modern Kodesh. And there are certain things you're not allowed to do there anymore. because it's already been set aside for a shoe, it gets a kedusha.
But Rav, then when you leave, the kedusha goes?
Yeah. Can you remove the kedusha?
Well, there are big shailas about that. Mm. There are certain things that you can't remove. The Ragachova, when he had a standard, and he learned at that standard. I don't know whether it was in his will, I think it was in his will. But when he died, they took the stender and they made the coffin out of the stender.
But some
synagogues are sold. Well, strictly speaking, you're not allowed to sell a shoe for anything that is that desecrates. For example, discotheques, is that what they call in some places? Sell a shoe for a discotheque, you're not allowed to do it.
There are much better examples. There have been countless shuls sold to be churches.
Yeah. Well, the place actually that I pass when I go to Los Angeles, I'm trying to take another route or another route now so that I shouldn't have to pass this place. You're quite right. There's a big Morgan David outside and it's a Tiffler. So what they do sometimes is they sell it to another place first and the other place buys it and sells it to a church. You know, try and do these things. On the other hand, the church, you can take a church and make a shul out of it. That you can do. Because you increase the kedusha. You can take, first of all, you can take a Beis HaKnesses and make a Beis HaMidrash out of it. But you're not supposed to take a Beis HaMidrash and make a Beis HaKnesses out of it. Because you're decreasing its kedusha. There is kedusha. It's Malin B'Kodesh V'Ein Morinin.
Okay, so Chazal has given us a mitzvah to dip, and therefore, or the mitzvahs of Tuma come along with it. So why only the leader of the Seder and not everybody involved in this mitzvah?
It is about that we're going to still have. I want to do the stasis, but I want to do the din also. We'll do the din also. All these things, we've done the dinim also. We haven't just left it. We've come and reached the conclusion in each one of these things. Sometimes the Gemara itself has brought the conclusion. For example, in the Machlokas of Rabuna and Rav Kisto, we've got Rav Ado Bar Rova, and we paskin like Rav Ado Bar Rova that we seek for other greens. For the first people, it shouldn't be Chazeres. Although we learned in the Gemara what happens if he's got only Chazeres, fine. But we do like Rav Ado Bar Rova, we go out of our way to get all this is the din. So we'll go through this, but I've got to first of all do a little bit of Rashi and Rashbam with you. So let us go through this Gemara together now. Omar Rabbi Loza, Omar Rav Oshia. Said Rabbi Loza, that Rav Oshia said, Kol sheti bula b'mashke, tzorich netilas yodayim. Anything that you've got to be matabe b'mashke needs netilas yodayim. Omar Rav Popa Shmamino, from this we can understand, Hai chasas tzorich lishakurei, Bacharo says Mishum Kapo that the moral you've got to sink it into the Charo says because of the Kapo. The is al Kodai Zechletzorich le Shakui the Shakui, because if you say it's not necessary to sink it but only to touch it to dip it, Natilas Yodaim Lomami. Why do you need Natilas Yodaim Holo Noga? He's not touching the mashke. His hands are not touching the liquid. Says the Gemara, no. V'dil mola olam eboloch leot sorich leshakui. I can say that it's not necessary to dip it, to sink it in. The kapo merechomais, and the kapo dies from the smell of it, and all you've got to do is just to touch it. That's all. And the hands don't come anywhere near it. Elo lomali netilas yodayim. In that case, why do you need netilas yodayim? Dilbo mashke ulei, because we are afraid that in his exuberance he will put it right in, and once he puts it right in, he touches and it's vitamin. Therefore, he says you've got to wash your hands. The Omar Popa. So now we've got a din. That the chazeres, the chas or the moral must go into the charoses because of kapo, but it doesn't say that you must put it deeply in. It just says all we can say from the Gemara is that you've just got to dip it, just touch it. Why then have you got to wash your hands? Because you might put it in deep and touch it. It's a precaution. The Omer Apopo, and furthermore says Trapo Velau Nishi Inish Morer Bacharel says, don't leave the Morer in the Charel says, Dilmo Agav Chayot Tavlim Avatel Elim Rure. Perhaps through the sweetness of the spices of the Charel says, it will diminish its bitterness. Uvo Inon Tam Morer. And we've got to have the Tam of Morer Veleko, and there isn't. So moral is something that you've actually got to taste the bitterness. You've got to taste the moral. And if you will leave it too long, it will lose its taste. Therefore, what do we do? How do we do our din of moral? We take our moral and we only touch it into the charoses, or dip it into the charoses and then shake it off. And then we put it into our mouth. So as not to have the taste of the charoses, that we mustn't have. And the charoses mustn't diminish the bitterness of the moral. So now we've got that din. So we've got a few din, and that is the way we do it. There are proper din we call into play that you mustn't leave it too long. Now, just let us do the Rashi on that. Sorich Natilas Yodai, says Rashi, Mishuma mashkin, because of the liquid, shehayodayim shnios, and the hands are shnios letumo, and shnios are metame trumo. Shnios, a sheni letumo, is not metame ochel. Ochel doesn't can't become a shlishi betumo, but trumo can become a shlishi betumo. V'chola posel betumo metame mashkin. And anything that passes trumo, that makes trumo that the Kohen can't eat it, is metame mashkin. That is metame mashkin. And since these hands are metame trumo, because shnias are metame make trumo a shlishi, a third, therefore it needs the washing of the hands. Sorich l'shakui b'charosis mishum kapo. It's necessary to sink it into charoses because of kapo. Says Rashi, Eres shebachazeres, the shebachazeres, it is a poison that is in the letters. Sheasorov shebachazeres, yeshbo eres, because the juice, asorov is the juice, that you call it juice? Sap is the word I wanted. Sap is the word. Because the sap that is in the letters, yeshbo eres, there is poison. Kedere chavetzolim, as applies also to onions. Onions. Holo noga, his hands, yode b'mashke, his hands didn't touch the mashke. The Rashbam Kol Sheti Bulo Vemashkin Kegon Yerek Bechutach Obechomet. If you dip Yerek, a green Bechutach, in a mixture of milk and crumbs of bread, it's something like they call you a relish, a sauce, or there's a relish or sauce. There's a third word that they use for it.
A dip.
Yes, overchomet or vinegar. Tzorich natilas yadayim b'shum maske. You need the natilas yadayim b'shum maske. She yadayim shnios, because the yadayim, the hands, are shnios l'tuma. V'chol apusel es atrumo. And shnios make trumo shlishi letumo. Metame mashkin liyos techilo. That which makes trumo a shlishi, that is, and they made hands shnios, then if it touches water, the water becomes a rishon letumo. And a rishon letumo makes food that it touches a shady letumo. Torich l'shakui b'charosis mishum kapo. Says the Rashbam, Eres shechazeres yeshbo eres. Eres, it's a poison. Shechazeres yeshbo eres, kederech habetzoli, because lettuce has in it a poisonous substance like onions. V'yilkoch, and therefore, tzorich netilas yodayim leptibul rishon kidla kamon. We need the tilis yodayim for the first rish tibul, as it explains, sharei nogeya b'mashkin, because he touches the water keshemashkeya es achazeres b'charoses. When he dips the lettuce into the charoses, he touches it. V'rach pireish kapo tolas. The Rabbeinu Hananel explains kapo as a kind of worm. I don't want to do that. That's a baraisa. That's a tesefta which I've got to go through more carefully with you.
Do that, and we buy two new things.
Yeah. Is 863-2476, and we had one line open. We're a slightly full board at the moment. We'll get to your next caller just as quickly as we can. We'd like to welcome to our call lines this evening Susan from Novato, I believe. Hello, Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank
Good evening. Welcome to the Money Line.
Thank you very much. I have a question you should direct at Robert Clinton regarding home ownership,
yes.
And I'd like to know what the various solutions to attaining equal ownership in a house are when one party invests a significant portion of the down payment. And part B of the question was...
Well, let's just stay with part A for a second first, please.
Okay. Yeah, I realize the situation
is part B a second. You're talking about where you perhaps have put down a major portion of the deposit for the ownership of a home.
Yes.
And your question is how to maintain your disequal interest in the home. Is that right, Robert?
That's basically that how to achieve at some point, what are the solutions towards achieving equal ownership in the house, given that situation?
Your intent is to own the house equally, notwithstanding the fact that the down payment came from one person rather than the other.
Yes, correct.
The way to do that then would be to draft an agreement between the two of you, or to have an attorney draft it, whereby the person contributing the down payment expressly waives their right to that reimbursement right which they are given under the new legislation this year. In other words, without an agreement, the person contributing the down payment would be entitled to reimbursement of that. If you want to waive that right, you should have a written agreement waiving that right.
Okay, fine. Part B is the question.
Part B, yes.
Would be, should the house be in a separate title until such time as either party, through appreciation on the house, etc., maintain equal ownership in the house? And can that be changed without too much difficulty?
Title is not changed. By simply recording the deed at the recorder's office. As I understand your question, you are trying to... one person wants to retain title until a certain event happens?
I'm wondering if that would be a prudent move in that situation.
Well, if your intent is to have equal ownership, there's no need to do that. If you are waiting for one person, if the agreement is supposedly one person will contribute the down payment, the other person will make the mortgage payments on a monthly basis, and at a certain point you intend for that to equalize, that should be the subject of an agreement between the two of you. And then the title really isn't that significant because you have a written contract explaining whatever title, whatever the legal title means.
Even if the title is only in one of two parties' names?
Correct, because the other party would have a right, would have a beneficial ownership interest in the property pursuant to the written contract between the two owners.
But can I reverse Susan's question around and say perhaps we're in a situation where one of the two parties wants to involve the ownership and the responsibility and the liabilities of the other party or the other cohabitant in one's life? Can I take a piece of property owned in my single name and write it into my girlfriend's name as well? Can I record a deed? Heaven help me if my wife is listening to this program. Can I record a deed that will include somebody else's name in a piece of property?
Yes. There's nothing to preclude two people from owning property jointly who are not married. Again, the question is, are there ownership interests to be defined pursuant to that deed recorded at the recorder's office, or do they have another agreement between the two of them? And if they have another agreement between the two of them, that should be the subject of a written agreement. It avoids an ambiguity later.
Mm-hmm. I might mention that if you're talking about the transfers between people who are not married, you may have a gift tax problem.
You wouldn't buy that.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Okay, that
Susan, does that clarify your world?
And I very much appreciate your help.
We are grateful for your call, too. Thank you very much indeed. Good evening. Gina, everyone go.
This is Jean. I would like to ask the attorneys a question about one of the things he mentioned, that a law that was changed in Sacramento this last year that would be effective this year. And this is regarding a case of alimony sort of thing. And I want to know if the complaint was signed or put into court in last year, that is 63, would that complaint be effective this year, or is it the...
Let's give Robert a chance to respond.
Okay,
the legislation is in the Civil Code under the Family Law Act, Civil Code Section 4800.2. It involves cases or covers cases that were not final on January 1, 1984. That includes a case that wasn't...
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. A case that wasn't finalized as of the first of this year, or that was up on appeal as of the first of the year. That only involves divorce cases. It does not cover palimony cases.
It doesn't cover palimony cases at all.
No. It's part of the Family Law Act, and it deals with community property of married people who are getting divorced.
Well, this is regarding property and other things and And I was just wondering if that law that you spoke of, that was passed in Sacramento, would be effective now, or if it comes up in a few months or so.
Yeah.
The case comes up in a few months.
In a current divorce, and a divorce...
No, not a divorce.
Oh, in a palimony case.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply.
Doesn't apply. And listen, another thing, would you please tell me, a reconveyance that was issued many years ago, is that lawful now? A reconveyance of property.
Of a deed of trust?
No, there was no deed of trust. I bought a house years ago and foolishly put the name of the man that I thought I was going to marry. Changed my mind within a year. And the title was changed that year, the first year. And I'm just worried about that. I have an attorney, but I just don't know. I can't understand these things.
If you have a properly executed deed from...
Yes, I have a deed that was signed over only in my name after a year that I bought the house.
And it has not been recorded?
Oh, it's recorded.
Well, then it's...
I have the deed.
And the deed includes the suitor's name?
The person who's suing me, yes.
No,
not on the deed. Just my name. Originally it was both names.
Mm.
And after a year, it was changed just in my name, and I have the deed. And I also have the reconveyance after the property was paid for.
Joanne, do you feel there's something to add there?
No, I think Robert is absolutely right. It sounds as though you should be protected if he conveyed back, and the property is now in your name.
It's been in my name for many years. But originally it was in both names.
You win, Jean. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. You win.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Thanks for joining us this evening, and I hope you will. If you've got a question all about or anything to do with love and money, our number here in San Francisco is 863-2476. And for once, I do have an open line at 863-2476 and two very bright talents here in the studio that might just well clarify a question, set you on the right road to protecting your assets. And good evening to Carol in South San Francisco.
Yes.
Hello, Carol.
Hello. My question is, my husband recently passed away, and we have a home in joint tenancy. My question is, do I have to go through probate, or may I just remove his name and leave it to my four children?
You don't have to go through probate. What you need to do is get the title cleared, and then what you do, you can then, it'll be in your name alone, and then you can then leave it to your own children.
Okay. Now, we also have a modest cabin up in Sonoma County. Must I go to the county recorder in Sonoma County and do likewise, have his name removed with the death certificate and, leave it to my children?
Yes, you follow the same procedures, when you say you want to leave it to your children, are you thinking of putting their names on the property?
That's correct. I plan to stay here.
Okay, one of the things you may want to consider is whether you want to put their names on the property or whether you'd prefer to keep it in your name for a while and either handle it by will or even if you wanted to use a trust.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the things about joint tenancy is it goes to the survivors no matter what. and you could get yourself into an interesting situation. For example, if you had four children, where one of the children died and left grandchildren, the grandchildren would be out.
So that's the little will.
Take it out. Don't put it in a joint tenancy if that's what you want to do. Get in your own name and use a will. If you want to avoid probate, use a trust.
Is there a question, Joanne, about whether Carol would have a problem of putting the house in her four children's name and thereby creating a gift?
That too, right.
What is that in
question? One of the questions was also if you put the house into joint tenancy, would there be a gift? And the answer to that is yes.
Is that advantageous?
It would depend.
In other words, I'm trying to avoid the children. If I, my demise, I'm trying to avoid the children it's to be divided equally.
Right. Well, the thing is, if you have that many children and you want it to, as I indicated earlier, have it go down a particular way, joint tenancy doesn't necessarily. The other point is that if you do make a transfer into joint tenancy and it's not with a spouse, and obviously in your case
correct.
It wouldn't be, you would have a gift. Then the question would be, would you owe any gift tax? And it would get into the questions of what it's worth and, whether you're in the exemptions and so on. So it's a little more complicated than perhaps you first thought.
I see.
Carol, I think you're going to have to follow this one up after our program, but thank you very much indeed for joining us. Good evening to Matt in Albany, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Hello, Matt.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my question has to do with changing tax brackets and what to do with long-term capital gains. My fiancé and I are going to be getting married this year. Right now we have each of us in about the 25% tax bracket, and we understand when we get married, the joint tax bracket, our California and federal will be going up probably to about approaching 50% anyway. And my fiancé is going to get a fairly large sum of money in the form of a long-term capital gain this year. We plan eventually to buy a house with the money, but before we do, we wonder if there's any way to invest the long-term capital gains, such as a way to defer taxes or to avoid the long-term capital gains at all before putting them into the house?
Well, one of the questions would be, usually the way you can defer is by structuring the transaction that's going to create the long-term capital gain in some other fashion. Is that a possibility?
I don't think so.
All right. So then the only other thing that I can really think about is what you usually do then is consider whether you could shelter income. Usually long-term capital gain is such a lower bracket that you probably will not try to shelter that. You usually try to shelter your ordinary income, which is in a higher bracket. One thing you might want to look into is the possibility of averaging, which is available if the thing is substantial enough. The other question would be what that will do to your brackets. I guess that's what's going to shove you up into the 50% bracket. Is that that's what you're indicating?
Right. Our combined income this year plus the long-term capital gain will probably put us into close to the 50% bracket.
Yeah, and which would, of course, increase the tax on the capital gain, unfortunately.
Can I throw a thought into the pot here, Joanne, and that is from the investment specialist standpoint. There is one technique which will not eliminate the long-term capital gains, but might just defer it from one tax year into another, and that is a technique of creating short-term losses in one year and transferring the capital gain by shadowing it with a short-term capital loss. It's a moderately expensive technique. It may cost between 3-5% of the amount of long-term capital gain that wants to be moved, but it will only move it. It will not eliminate it. It will simply transfer it from the 84 tax year to maybe into the 85 tax year, and it is not without risk, but it's a technique that might deserve some considerations. We're going to have to keep moving here. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Good evening to John in San Francisco. San Mateo, I'm sorry.
Hello, yes.
Hello, John. You've got about 1 minute for your question.
I was just wondering about postnuptial agreements. You folks talked about prenuptial agreements. Can you agree after your marriage to divide certain property?
Yes, you can. The formalities actually are easier after you're married than before. A premarital agreement has to